Greetings, everybody. Tonight's episode of The Voice of Indy is an encore presentation of episode 157 with Robert G. Willowscroft. Due to a mix-up in plans, tonight's intended live presentation with Robert G. Willowscroft has been postponed until January 3rd. We will return live next week with our year-end celebration. Again, tonight's episode is a rerun, so the phone lines will not be open. Merry Christmas to all our listeners.
Time for Voice of Indy. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Hey, welcome to another Wednesday evening, everybody. This is the Voice of Indy podcast, episode number 157. I'm your host, Beam Weeks. And with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing nifty and keen. It's been hot as blazes down here, but I'm sitting here in the air conditioning, getting ready to talk to our guest tonight.
Woohoo! All right.
So we got stuff going on.
We've got, we do, all kinds of stuff.
We've got a book that's getting ready to come out here in about a month called Village Boss, and that's... It's going to be a crime thriller, which is really cool. We're working on Celebrate 98 by Off the Hook Sports Dave Hooker, who's a sports writer in Tennessee, and he's looking at the 1998 Tennessee Football Championship. Woo. All right. We've got more books out. We've got a book that's out there now. It's not in pre-sale. It's for sale, so get your copy. It's called Slingshot by Robert G. Willowscroft. Now, who is this Willowscroft fellow? Well, we're going to see if we can find out in tonight's podcast. But in the meantime, that's the first of four books in the Starchild saga. Originally, he had a Starchild trilogy, and he's republishing it. We're adding the Daedalus Files, this book two, in there, and making it a four-book Starchild saga with full-color interiors this time. So all the graphics in there are full-color, even in the print editions. That's Slingshot by Robert G. Willowscroft, and it's out now. Get out there and get started on the Starchild saga, people.
All right. And also, right now, in I believe it's in pre-order, The Gift by Gwendolyn M. Plano. This is actually a cool project that Gwen and all of the ladies at Story Empire decided to create a series. And each of them are writing a story that's connected to this series. And they have all put uploaded their books, and they're going to release them at specific times. I believe Gwen's is sometime in October, but you can go over to Amazon and you can pre-order it, The Gift by Gwendolyn M. Plano. And show your support. Gwen's a fantastic writer, as all of these ladies at Story Empire are. I've read books from each of them, and fantastic writers and great storytellers. So get over there and pre-order a copy. Hey, if you want to know more about the books that Fresh Ink Group is releasing, or who's going to be on this podcast, or all things Fresh Ink Group, Voice of Indy, and indie publishing in general, we've got a newsletter. And our guy Sam is he's hard at work on these things every week, putting them together so that you know what's what. He doesn't clutter them so that you're not going to get stuck with a bunch of junk that's going to take you 4 hours to read. It's just to the point. You can scroll through it, and if you're interested in this, click on it, and it'll take you to videos, just all kinds of cool stuff. Here's how you can sign up and be subscribed to our newsletter if you're not already. And if you're not, I'm ashamed of you.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What? All right. No, I'm not ashamed of anybody, so don't worry about that. I am hard at work right now on an audiobook from Cheryl Carpinello. Her Young Knights young adult story has been turned into an audiobook. And I'm in the process of producing the book itself, which means putting the sound effects and all that stuff in there. And there's some just some really cool stuff that's coming down the pipe. So keep an ear out for that. You'll find out all about it you're subscribed to our newsletter, so keep that in mind. Young Knights, audiobook by Cheryl Carpinello, coming soon.
Yeah, what's especially notable about that, too, is that there's a whole lot of young adult chapter books out there like this, but they tend to be, you know, geared a little bit more toward girl audiences. And Cheryl makes it a point to try to write these stories in a way where she can appeal to young teenage boys and middle school boys. She's trying to get boys interested in reading, too. So
yeah,
keep your eyes
listening
out, people. If you know a boy that you're trying to get interested, you know, in reading and stories and things like that, Cheryl Carpinello is a good author for that.
Yeah, and just, you know, listening to our good voiceover guy, Ethan Drew, the way he's reading these, this will be, if you've got young adults, teen boys, even some preteen boys, they're going to love this one. If you don't want to get the audiobook, get the book. It's a good story.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's talk about who's selling books at Fresh Ink Group. And somebody must be selling some, because I spent like the last 2 days writing royalty checks and mailing these things out, and my arm hurts and my pocket hurts. And it's like you start with a number. It's like, well, that's a pretty nice number. And then you just start writing those checks, and that number just keeps dropping and dropping and dropping. Good. People are selling books. It's been going real well out there, and we've got a lot of happy authors, and some of them more than others, obviously, and some are passion projects and stuff, but hey, we're all having fun, right? So let's see who's selling some books. Great, it just dumped out of my screen. Let me get back into it again. I'm noticing that the top five that were there a couple of days ago are still the top five right now. The only difference is Jerry Pate's book has been steamrolling. He's picking up pace. So when we get up to where he is in the list, we'll see what's going on there. Now, top 25 print bestsellers, Fresh Ink Group, at number 25, Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor by Larry Jorgensen, the hardcover edition. Now, I got a feeling when we get up near the top, the softcover of that's going to be in the top three, but we'll see when we get up there. Now, Larry Landgraf. Larry Landgraf's an author that's been around for quite a while, and he's been part of Fresh Ink Group for, I don't know, something like 8 or 9 years, I believe. He's got a four-book series that's post-apocalyptic dystopian thriller series. And his book, Into Winter, which I believe is the third book in the series, paperback edition, is coming in at number 24. We're going to see another book in that series higher up in the list, too. The Chair, Volume 2, by Robert McKenzie, is in here next. And then Hello Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley, by newscaster David Carroll. That's a fun book. Now, one that we've haven't seen on the list for quite a while, but seems to be picking up some steam here, is Time Past, Time Present, Essays, Stories, and Reminiscences of What I Learned the First Time Around, by Mark Allen North. That's a cool memoir, very insightful, really interesting writing. A lot of fun. Now, we've got When Angels Fly by S. Jackson, which is one of the pseudonyms used by Mary Schmidt. She's got two books that are about losing her son to pediatric brain cancer when he was only 5 years old. When Angels Fly is the recounting of all of that and, you know, all that happened and everything. And then later, she wrote another book, Sammy Hero at Age 5, where she told the story again, but from the point of view of the little boy. So, When Angels Fly is the next on our list. Congratulations, Mary Schmidt. And then next above that, There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation, by Abigail Miriam Hamilton Hugenie. That's the black folks who grew up in the low country of South Carolina and amazed everybody by going on and just accomplishing all kinds of great things. This, you know, despite coming from a background of, in many cases, poverty or, you know, not having access to the same kind of resources a lot of other people have had. So congratulations, Abigail, on There Must Be Something in the Water. Next up, Slingshot, Building the Largest Machine in Human History by Robert G. Willis Croft. We just mentioned that earlier. That's the first of four books in the Star Child saga. We're getting that second book out hopefully in the next couple of weeks here, and then third and fourth will follow maybe a week or two after that. The Chair, Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory by Robert McKenzie. So we've got the first two books so far in the top 25 list. We're looking for book number three, see if it lands. Janice D. Toney's Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament, paperback edition. This is an illustrated chapter book for children. And that book's really, it's only been out for about 3 weeks now, and it's really starting to take off as well, too. And she's getting all kinds of great reaction out there, invitations to do speaking engagements, to hold events. Libraries have been inviting her, and she's got local bookstores, gift shops, and things like that have been talking to her about selling the book, directly hand-selling it as well. So congratulations, Janice Tony. She's out there working it, and it's paying off. The next one, Into Spring, The Next Generation by Larry Landgraf. That's one of those four dystopian thrillers, post-apocalyptic. Above that, we've got another Robert G. Willis Croft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. And this is the hardcover edition, the hardcover. People are buying the hardcover, dust jacket and hardcover, and putting that on their shelves and saving it after they read it. And when people want to buy it, borrow it, they're telling them, well, no, you're going to have to go get your own because I've got a nice hardcover. And I've got a collection of Willis Crofts on my shelf, and I'm keeping them in good shape. Mark Herndon. The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Mark played drums with the super country group Alabama for almost 3 decades. And then things got weird, and then things got ugly, and the band supposedly retired, although they got back together again, you know, for another farewell tour after the farewell tour, and they sued Mark, and things got real, real ugly for a while there. But Mark took the high road, and he tells the whole story, warts and all, and he takes responsibility for everything that was his. And basically, it's a chance to spend some time with a guy who lived the dream. And, boy, he did live it, didn't he, Beam?
Yes, he did. He, you know, like you said, he took the high road, but he still shows you some of the warts, you know.
Yeah.
But not in a mean sort of way.
No. And you know, it was one of those things where we heard that when it came out, the members of Alabama all got together with their lawyer and are all sitting there with a copy of the book going through it looking for something they could sue us about. Couldn't come up with anything because he took the high road. He just put it out there, told the truth, and didn't slam anybody or make anybody look any worse than they, you know, deserved for whatever they decided to do here and there. But that's the high road, Memories from a Long Trip. We published that in 2016, and it has never left our bestseller list in 7 years. Congratulations, Mark. Next up, Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. That's a political look at what's going on these days with enforcement and the opioid war. And sometimes it can be argued that it's going way overboard and getting out of hand. And Helen takes a real hard look at that. How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition by Kenneth Lindquist. That's one of two books. There's also a parent's edition. So any of you out there who want to become a driving ed instructor, the instructor's edition is a great way to prepare you for getting certified. The parent's edition is a great way to show your love for the young people that you want to try to keep safe, whether they appreciate it or not. How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida by A.K. Wingler. That's one of the three food truck books that she has out so far. And then the next up, the hardcover edition of The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon. So the hardcover's outselling the softcover on that. All right, Beam, here we go. Robert McKenzie, The Chair, Volume 3, 7, 8, and 9. That's the current one that only just came out, what, about a month ago, something like that?
Yeah.
And it's up here in our top 10. So The Chair, Volume 3 by Robert McKenzie. He's already written 4 and 5 and already sent us all the stuff. So it's like, gee, we got some work to do, don't we, Dean?
Yeah.
All right, now we've got the hardcover edition of a book called Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate. He's a retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander, Chief of the Boat, who has 60 chapters of memoir here telling the true gritty stories about life underwater and life in the Navy and dealing with all of the different aspects of that that era as well. So he's got some cool stories. Next up, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. And then this is the hardcover edition in our top 10. So we're selling novels in hardcover, sometimes outselling the softcover editions. I've been making noise about that all year, and I'm still making noise about it because that's not how it used to be.
You know,
it used to be we'd put out a hardcover and a softcover for every 100 of a novel, you know, of fiction. And for every 100 soft covers you'd sell maybe 2 or 3 of those hard covers. And now sometimes they're actually outselling the softs. I wonder why that is. If you figure that out, let me know. Now, here we go. Operation Ivy Bells and Mac McDowell Mission, the paperback edition by Robert G. Willis Croft is number 5. So, we've got a Willis Croft in the top 5 this week. Operation Ivy Bells, that's the first of 4 Mac McDowell Mission books. And I tell you more about them now, but we're going to roll a commercial during the show, so we'll let the commercial tell you the details. So now we're down to the top 4. Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson. That's the first of 2 illustrated chapter books for young teens and older children. And these are designed to teach them about their AME church, the history, the background, what, you know, how things are now, and to make it accessible to children. Barbara found a nice niche for that. She's a member of that church, and she also, you know, teaches Sunday school, just things like that. And she was looking for some materials to help her young people learn more about the history of her church and couldn't find them. So what do we writer types do when we can't find some? We write it ourselves. So congratulations. Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson is at number 4. Number 3, nonfiction. Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor by Larry Jorgensen, and this is the paperback edition. This is the story of the 240 1920s Chryslers that were being shipped across Lake Superior and never made it there. What happened to them? Man, you got to get that book if you want to find out. There is no telling. So that gets us down to our top 2. And here where I'm looking at these things, they actually assign stars to them now. So Shipwrecked and Rescued had a bronze star. The Silver Star, number 2, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate, the paperback edition. Now, last week, Submariner was also at number 2, and the one that was at number 1 had almost double the number of sales as Submariner. This week, there's only 7 difference. So Submariner is within 7 copies of overtaking that number 1 spot again. I got a feeling Jerry's probably out there buying 8 copies right now. We're all proud to see when that book jumps up there, and it's been staying up there in the top few, so congratulations, Jerry. Now, that brings us to number 1, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Towns. For the 2nd week in a row, it's our number 1 print bestseller at Fresh Ink Group, and this is the paperback edition, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Towns. So we're going to hear the commercial for that, too, so no point in talking anymore about it. Congratulations, everybody.
Not today, we're not. It's not on.
Yeah, we'll hear it. We'll hear it next week, then.
All right, so with that in mind, a lot of those authors of those books have been on this program over the last few years. And if you missed them or you want to relive them, guess what? We've got an archive, and we've got 156 episodes. This is number 157, and this one will be in there in the morning. 156 episodes in our archives, and here's where you can find those if you missed one.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search the Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right, let's meet today's guest. Excuse me. Dr. Robert G. Willis Croft served 23 years in the U.S. Navy and NOAA Commissioned Corps. He enlisted as a nuclear submarine sonar tech in 1961, was selected for the Navy Enlisted Scientific Education Program in 1966, and graduated from University of Washington in 1969. He returned to nuclear subs as the Navy's first Poseidon Weapons Officer. Now, that's a title I would like to have, Poseidon Weapons Officer. All right.
Yeah.
That sounds like the name of a movie.
Yeah.
Subsequently, he served as navigator and diving officer on both catamaran mother vessels for the Deep Submergence Rescue Vehicle. Then he joined SubDev Group 1 out of San Diego as the officer in charge of the Test Operations Group, conducting deep ocean surveillance and data acquisition, which forms the basis for his best-selling Cold War novel, Operation Ivy Bells, which I have it on good authority is selling very well right now, and the subsequent books in the Mac McDowell Mission series. In NOAA, he directed diving operations in the Pacific and Atlantic, served 3 years in the Arctic on science projects, and 13 months at the geographic South Pole with the National Science Foundation. The U.S. Commerce Department published his doctoral dissertation, A System for Protecting Scuba Divers from the Hazards of Contaminated Water, and distributed it to port captains worldwide. His writing covers terrorism, current events, children's science education, submarine techno-thrillers, and hard science fiction. Welcome to the show, Robert G. Willis-Croft.
Yeah, welcome, Robert.
It is my pleasure to be here.
So how is everybody at Willis-Croft household these days out there in Colorado?
We're doing pretty good. The days are hot. The nights are cool. How could you want more?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we've had you on the show a couple of times before, so we're going to kind of skip over some of the things we normally ask, and let's get into what's been going on with you lately, your marketing, your promotion, and we want to hear all about your books in a little more detail. So let's start with the one that just came out, Slingshot and the entire Star Child saga. What's that about? Tell us what's going on with that. Why is Slingshot, you know, such an innovative scientific development or whatnot, and what's going on with the republishing?
When I was at the South Pole, I took some scientific papers with me to study while I was down there, and one of them, by a scientist named Keith Lofstrom, described a system for launching vehicles into space without using rockets. It was called a space launch loop. It fascinated me, and when I got out of my 13 months at the Pole and came back to civilization, I looked him up, and we spent a couple of days together looking at his concept and then working out the engineering details and outlining the basis for a novel describing the description of the first space launch loop, and that became Slingshot. It was launched at the International Space Elevator Conference in Seattle, and a copy of the book now sits on the desk of every space elevator scientist on Earth.
Wow.
Cool. Huh.
So that's what's going on in the first book, in Slingshot.
Right. So it tells basically the story of what the space launch loop is and follows the people, the good guys who try to build it, the bad guys who try to stop it, the reporter who reports on incidents and uses whatever she can to get her stories, and it's a great story with lots and lots of good reviews.
All right, and that one is definitely out now, and then the one we're working on trying to get that out in the next week or two is the Star Child Saga Book 2, which is the Daedalus Files. Daedalus, what's that about?
Yeah.
I was reading about wingsuits because they fascinate me. Wingsuits are a way of doing a base jump from a high cliff and flying down with material between your arms and legs and between your legs, and you can sort of glide oftentimes very close to the ground, usually well over 100 miles an hour, until you finally reach a point where you pop your parachute and then come on down to the surface. And this fascinated me. And then I discovered that a German company was, a consortium actually, of several companies, was working on and in the process of building a hard shell wingsuit called the Griffon. And I was fascinated by it. And I got to thinking, what if the Navy SEALs were to get a hold of the Griffon and develop it for dropping into combat from low Earth orbit? And that is the underlying story of the Daedalus Files.
Wow. So what's going on in the real world with that kind of stuff? I mean, I go over to YouTube sometimes and just look to see, and I see all kinds of new things that they're doing with fans and different kinds of suits and gliders and whatnot. It seems to be a hot area for research.
Are you
following that?
I've seen a lot of those videos on YouTube with the guys doing the base jumping, and that looks crazy.
Yeah.
Well, if you look hard enough, you will find a couple of videos that show a Hercules C-130 aircraft with a guy in a hard shell wingsuit flying rings around the aircraft.
Wow.
And
wow.
They've gotten that far with it. Now, have the SEALs picked it up? If they have, they didn't bother to inform me, but I gave them the guidebook for it.
Mm.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, subscribe to their newsletter. Who knows what you might learn. So now this was originally published as 4 novellas, right? And then took it from there?
Right. It was 4 stories. The first one was introducing the readers to Derek Tiger Bailey, who was an adrenaline junkie wingsuit flyer, and he gets recruited into the SEALs to develop the Daedalus, as they called it. And the story takes place in the world of Slingshot, so there is a space launch loop available, and they eventually, toward the end of the first story, Tiger drops from 80 kilometers at one of the sky towers in the Pacific to the Sirimabati Islands, where he lands, barely makes it, goes through a couple of big thunderstorms, and that's the first story. Second story, the team develops the same thing, so it isn't just he, it's the whole team. In the third story, they drop from low Earth orbit. They reach the point where they can do that. And in the fourth tale, they actually drop into live combat.
Wow.
All right. So what's book number three, the Star Child Compact? What's this about?
The Earth's the sun's planet Saturn has a moon called Iapetus. The moon has an equator, a mountain range on the equator that's about 20 kilometers high by 20 kilometers wide, goes all the way around the equator, and the density of this moon would be just fine if the moon were a snowball, but it isn't. It's a rocky moon. Which simply doesn't make sense. We've done a close flyby with the Cassini, and I've studied it. I've looked at it closely. It's definitely a rocky moon, but if it were hollow, then all the numbers fit. And so I thought, being a hard science fiction author, what if it were a derelict starship? And in the Star Child Compact, several of the Earth's nations get together and they build a spaceship. This is a big undertaking, to build a spaceship that can take a crew all the way to Saturn. And they launch the spaceship and go to Saturn. On the way, they find that one nation, the Caliphate, put a jihadist on board to try and stop the mission for reasons that they best understood. But they find him and capture him and sort of integrate him into the crew. But when they get to Iapetus, they discover that it is indeed a derelict starship. And eventually they meet the descendants of the people who built this starship, and that has huge consequences for Earth and the nations on Earth, and the story kind of takes off from there.
Wow, this definitely sounds cool. Now, you wrote these originally, what, something like 15, 20 years ago?
The first book was written in 2015.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't that long ago. Because I just saw a movie, a science fiction movie, maybe a year or two ago, something like that, where the Earth's moon turned out to be a spaceship. And I thought, man, they owe Robert Willis Cross some royalties here, some licensing fees or whatever. But, yeah.
Let me tell you about the fourth book, the Iapetus Federation. This jihadist that they kept on the crew, one of the guys kept saying we ought to space him. Well, when they get back to Earth, they let him go, and he has so much influence because of his having survived all of this that he becomes Islam's new prophet, replacing Muhammad, and he has a real problem with the world that doesn't buy into his perception, and he starts and leads a worldwide jihad. The subtitle of the book is Exodus from Earth, and everybody who can is doing their best to get the hell out of Dodge, and where they're headed is Iapetus and the Iapetus Federation that's put together to accommodate people who would rather live free.
So this is a four-book series now. Is this self-contained, or do you think maybe someday there might be a volume five?
Well, in fact, there will be a volume five. And as soon as I complete the two books in the Oort Federation that I'm working on now, and that is the third and fourth Oort Chronicle, and when I finish the fifth, which will be titled Andromeda. In Andromeda, the people in both of these series meet up. They're each from separate universes, but the focus of the Oort Chronicles is the discovery of an exploration of an alternate universe, and that's where they find the guys from the Star Child saga, and they meet up and do things together.
Oh, cool. I like it when authors, you know, Heinlein used to do that. He'd take a character and then cross over into another book or have a timeline of something going on one way and then carry that into a different one. So cool to see you doing that.
Well, you're allowed to compare, you know, you're allowed to compare me to Heinlein anytime.
Yeah, Heinlein has always been my all-time favorite science fiction writer, and man, you can't beat what a contribution he made to the genre. So we're going to go ahead and roll two commercials here. One is the Star Child Trilogy, which is the original commercial we made when it was a three-book series, so that we can tell a little bit more about those series. Obviously, once we get these four out, we'll need to update it and make a four-book commercial. And we're going to play the Daedalus Files commercial as well, since that fits right into this series.
Now, the Star Child Trilogy by Robert G. Williscroft is complete. In Book 1, Slingshot, three scientist engineers reach for the stars as they blend their skills with a host of skilled colleagues to create the world's first space launch loop. A team of young eco-terrorists will go to any length to halt the project. One woman is determined to scoop the story, reporting events to a watching world. Slingshot ranges from Seattle's financial district to the ocean bottom off Baker Island to the edge of space and across the vast panorama of an equatorial Pacific. It's a love story, a gender bender, and a mystery about a missing aviatrix, a conspiracy, and a true believer. It's about high finance, intrigue, heroism, fanaticism, betrayal, and humanity's surge into outer space. In Book 2, The Star Child Compact, an international team ventures to Saturn's moon Iapetus to verify it really is a derelict starship. They discover the founders, descendants of the starship's builders, who arrived in our solar system 150,000 years ago. Together with the founders, the explorers advance founder science with momentous implications for the entire solar system, paving the way for a joint push to the distant reaches of the galaxy. But a Persian caliphate stowaway sabotages the mission, hoping to destroy science that he believes violates Islam. The Star Child Compact blends tomorrow's science with human foibles, fears, beliefs, and political intrigue, speculating on how civilization might develop while traveling on a generational starship, and how modern humans might interact with remnants of that civilization. In Book 3, the Iapetus Federation, besieged Israelis on Earth make their way to Mars as the Federation expands throughout the solar system. While global jihad rages on Earth, putting millions to the sword, the Star Child Institute develops wormhole transportation. But will this new technology be ready in time to rescue all that is left of the United States, the beleaguered Lone Star Conservancy, and remnants of other cultures around the globe? From hand-to-hand combat in the oceans, to battles on Earth's surface, to struggles in interplanetary space, our heroes fight to survive and expand to the far reaches of the universe. Robert G. Williscroft is an adventurer, polar explorer, deep sea diver, nuclear submariner, scientist, and best-selling, award-winning author. His stories portray the accurate science and precise engineering that appeals to hard science fiction buffs. But the Star Child Trilogy is for everyone who loves an epic tale, a grand journey by men and women who loom larger than life as they work, play, and love. Make the Star Child Trilogy your own with individual hardcover, softcover, audiobook, and all major ebook editions worldwide, or collect the entire set for one epic journey by Robert G. Williscroft, The Star Child Trilogy.
In Daedalus, Navy SEAL Derek Tiger Bailey, irreverent member of the SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, makes a harrowing first base jump in the experimental Griffin 7 hard-shell wingsuit from the edge of space. He test flies the armor-plated Griffin 10 in Daedalus LEO, catapulting into space by slingshot and dropping from a record-obliterating 160 clicks. Testing the enhanced Griffin 10 MK4 in Daedalus Squad, Bailey's six-man team believes it is fully prepared for hurtling around the world and staging critical re-entry, but challenged to innovate life-or-death solutions with only seconds to spare. It might not survive intact. Then the presidential frontrunner is seized by pirates for ransom in Daedalus combat, and the SWIC team is called to action where it must literally improvise on the fly with everything to lose. Join Tiger Bailey through all four adventures in sci-fi master Robert G. Willis-Croft's Daedalus series, now collected for the first time as the Daedalus Files, SEALS Winged Insertion Command, SWIC.
All right. So, Robert, the first commercial there had a familiar-sounding voiceover. Who was that?
That was Trenton Bennett.
And why do we care about Trenton? Is he involved in any of your projects?
Well, let me see. I think, with the exception of one book, that Trenton actually is the narrator for all my audiobooks.
Yeah. All right. So what's it like working with Trenton? Because we've had him on the show as a guest before talking about the audiobook.
Trenton is quite a guy. He's a professional. He has a full studio, and he's constantly expanding his knowledge and his capabilities. But he creates, for me, and I presume other authors he works with, a spreadsheet so that when I get a chapter from him, I go through the chapter verifying what he has read, and when there's a problem or when I want a slightly different emphasis, I'm able to give the time of it and the wording of it, and then tell him what changes need to be made. And he picks it up, and a couple days later, back it comes with all the changes. It's quite an experience.
Yeah, he also narrates virtually all of the commercials that we've made for you about your books, too. I think all of them except Daedalus.
Yeah, that's true. And I had the audio for Operation Ivy Bells done before I met him.
Wow. Okay.
Now, Robert, we understand you recently picked up an award. What's the Cal Award all about?
And what is Cal?
Cal stands for Colorado Authors League. It is the premier authors writing group in Colorado. Membership is for published authors, and we have recently decided to bring in people, illustrators for books and cover illustrators as well. And there's an annual awards competition, and the book, the second Ort Chronicle, the Ort Federation, won first place in science fiction.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, definitely first place. Wow.
Yeah, it's a prestigious award, and it's particularly gratifying because I spend a fair amount of time. I'm the group's treasurer and spend a lot of energy working with them, but the judging is done entirely outside the organization by professionals who understand reading and writing.
Wow. Well, that congratulations.
Helps.
Yeah. Okay, so now the Ort Federation is the second Ort Chronicle in your Ort Chronicle series as well. Now, we've got a commercial for those first couple. Why don't we go ahead and roll that beam, and then we'll talk about those books.
The Ort.
Icicle Ort.
That's what I'm looking at. There we go.
Introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Willis-Croft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Ort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. he awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, a Tensor Matrix, the first Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, a Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right.
Ooh. So, Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit more about how this got started and what happens in Icicle, how that leads to the Oort Federation, and what we can expect from here?
Well, the commercial gave a pretty good summary of Icicle, describing how Thorpe becomes instrumental in putting together a defense of the solar system as an electronic upload. The characters that are developed in Icicle continue to play significant roles in the Oort Federation. Icicle ends with the alien attack and Thorpe's and his people's efforts to prevent the destruction of life on Earth. The Oort Federation commences after that battle with a lot of people wanting to go to Aster, where the aliens came from, and exact a revenge. At this point, Thorpe has become the chairman of the Oort Federation, which is a loosely knit group of nations and peoples and companies and corporations off Earth. And he's had second thoughts about this whole thing, discovers information that was previously unavailable that says that maybe the aliens' reason, the Asterians' reasons for attacking are not what we thought, and he ends up putting together an expedition to their star system and establishes cordial relations with them. And one of the Russian oligarchs who's been opposing him all the time ends up in the same star system, and they end up in conflict in the solar system of the star Aster, where humans and Asterians are combating a rogue human. And, of course, the good guys eventually prevail, and they put together a large 5 kilometer across starship called Andromeda, and it gets ready to head out for what is called the microwave background radiation cold spot, which is about 9 billion light years away in the constellation of Adamas. They're headed in that direction, and they make a stop at the star Ran, where they find a civilization that has been hiding itself for fear of marauding spacefaring groups like the Asterians or like the humans from overwhelming them, and that is the third Oort Chronicle entitled Ran, a civilization in hiding.
And what's the status of that book?
That is one half written. It'll be done in about a month.
Oh, gee. So you don't sleep either, huh? Now, I'm in the process of working on the cover for the third one right now. We've got some artwork, and we're starting to get the titles and stuff together, too. I'm assuming this one's going to have a cat in the title somewhere, like the first two do. Is that true? And what's up with the cat?
Yeah, it's even the same cat, Max.
Yeah, Max. Although there's two Maxes now.
Yeah, there's Max and there's Emax. They used the one of the things that they did when Braxton Thorpe was uploaded when Earth developed that technology, when it came time to do this to other humans, they needed to work with something other than human, and somehow Max the tabby cat volunteered, and what we ended up with was Max the cat unharmed and Emax the uploaded tabby cat, who gets very familiar with being able to move all over the solar system by passing through portals. You walk into your office unexpectedly, and he's quite a character.
It's just like a cat too, isn't it?
Yeah.
You open that door into summer, and he'll find a way out there.
We remember Heinlein's book, Cats That Walk Through Walls.
Yep.
It was a cat who walked through walls. Yeah. Max is kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, same thing with The Door into Summer by Heinlein. You're predicting about a month or two for Rand to come out, and then I assume that you want to go beyond that, right?
Oh, yeah. I have already written the fourth one.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, tell us about that. You wrote that for a contest?
Now, let me explain. A Singapore company came out with a call to write a book about a novel anywhere between 30,000 and 100,000 words about something called a Dyson sphere. Now, for those of you who don't know what a Dyson sphere is, let me explain. Freeman Dyson was a physicist, an astrophysicist, theoretical physicist, who in 1960 wrote a paper describing civilizations. And he hypothecated that at some point, a civilization like ours will reach a point where we consume all of the power available to us on our planet. That would be power we produce on the planet, power we get from the sun. We just can't get any more power. That's called a Type 1 civilization. Now, we're not quite there yet, but we're headed in that direction. A Type 2 civilization is the next step, where the civilization, the Type 1 civilization, decides that they need to start using as much of the energy from the sun as they can. And the only way, Freeman Dyson said, to capture all of the energy from a star, from a sun, is to construct a sphere all the way around the star. And this came to be called a Dyson sphere. It is a massive undertaking that is just, it is almost hard for somebody with our level of understanding to comprehend. You're talking about a sphere that has a circumference like the Earth's orbit and goes all the way around the sun.
Wow. So what's the status of this contest? You just entered it, or you're about to enter? What's going on?
Well, what they did, they offered 10 $20,000 first prizes.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Several unspecified second prizes of $2,000. The submission deadline was August 31. So I'm inside the deadline, and I'm trying to submit it by the end of this week. We're editing it now as a plain manuscript, no drawings, no illustrations, nothing like that, just a plain double-spaced manuscript. But they're offering publication rights and the whole nine yards that goes with it for the ten best novels, which will each win $20,000. And so I wrote one and put it within the Oort Chronicle series as number four, being very careful not to do things in that would conflict with what I was writing in number three.
So that's just a cash prize then. It's not like any kind of a contract or promotion or marketing or a tour or anything like that. We'll write you a check.
They're offering a publishing contract for the 10 winners.
Ah, okay. Wow, that's
cool.
It's,
you know, for the winners, it's a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for the ones who don't win, they've still got a book that they wrote, and they can do other things with that as well. So
and they
that's
still have
cool.
$2,000, and they have $2,000 in their pocket.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Robert, was it difficult writing the fourth book before the third book?
It was challenging.
Hmm.
I spent all every day. I started writing on the. On the 5th of May, and I finished it on the last day of the 25th of June.
Wow, that's cranking it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I was
doing
1,500 to 3,000 words a day.
Wow. And you work with outlines and notes, I assume.
Yes, I spent the first 3 weeks writing a careful outline.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you're going to write things out of order, that organization really, really makes a difference. Okay.
Yeah. Now, if I hadn't had the outline, I couldn't have written it. It would have been impossible.
Now, Beam, I understand we had a caller from Virginia that has dropped. Caller, still out there, call back.
Yeah, he's been in here a couple of times, and he drops out before we can get a chance to get to him or her. And, call back. We'd love
to definitely.
Have you.
All right, so Robert G. Willis-Croft is our guest. Anybody else who's interested in calling in right now, 516-453-9902, or you can post a comment with hashtag Fresh Ink Group over on Twitter. And right now we've got a comment from Verwayne Greenhow saying he read the Fig. He reads the Fig newsletter first thing every morning. I think he means every Wednesday morning, but good. Glad to see that somebody's opening that thing, Verwayne. We get lots of clicks and lots of traffic through that newsletter, so that's pretty cool. So,
and we do have the caller back online.
All right, well, then let's see what Virginia has to say.
All right. So let's go to the caller. Hello, caller.
Hello?
You're on the air. Where are you calling from? What's your name?
I'm calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and I'm John Rosenman.
Hi, John.
Welcome to the show, John.
I'm glad to be here. I'm a friend of Robert's and a fellow writer.
Oh.
All right.
What do you write, John?
I write science fiction as well as fantasy, a little paranormal. I have one young adult novel out. But mostly it's science fiction adventure, speculative fiction, and a little space opera mixed in.
Yeah, I recognize your name.
About 20 books. And Robert and I read each other's stuff and critique it and comment and edit it.
Cool. So do you have a comment or a question for the old scoundrel himself?
I do. And this is probably more relevant with regard to the Ord Chronicles. Today there's more and more emphasis upon artificial intelligence, for example, with in the act of writing, and you don't know if it's real or if it's Memrex, if it's a human being or not. And there's some automatic writing as well. And in the Ord Chronicles, Robert features artificial electronic uploads, e-uploads. He has E. Thorpe, E. Braxton. He doesn't have E. Robert yet, but that may be coming. And my question is, with all this, I have a couple questions. Basically, what happens to individual identity when you can have multiple electronic uploads, not just one or two, but five? I know they can't have children, at least so far, or perhaps navigate ships. But what happens to individual identity and... is it still the same as it used to be, or is it divided among all these copies of each other, physical and otherwise?
Well,
that's my main question.
That's an interesting question, John, and I really appreciate you calling in. When a single electronic upload decides to clone him or herself to create an identical electronic version, that becomes a new individual. And at that point, their timelines separate, their lives separate, They mm-hmm. both remember everything identically up to that point, and from that point on, their memories separate. That's what happened to E. Thorpe and E. Braxton. They were originally Braxton Thorpe,
mm-hmm.
and at some point they separated and became separate people.
Wow.
I do know this since I've read virtually everything Robert's written. I thought we were calling in to talk to the author. He asked me to do it so they could respond. I just wonder if you do have potentially 50 electronic uploads, maybe a space at different time periods and physical and the original, if it ever becomes complicated and confused, not as clear cut as you just defined. That was one question I had. And another question, if you want one.
Yeah.
Sure.
I read, for example, this is a very topical. I read the Chicken Little agenda. And Robert's thesis or view differs from that of many people. He feels the sun is largely in charge when it comes to climate change. Well, we do aggravate our problems with greenhouse gases and emissions and all that, but he feels that solar cycles are to blame or the cause of climate change and fluctuations in our weather. I just wonder, with the sudden heat spells we've had, the scorching heat, especially actually throughout the world and in the United States, if that indicates that maybe human-made climate change may be more of a factor than he thought.
Well,
I wonder if it's changed
fair,
the budget,
it's fair,
attitude
it's fair,
at all.
Yeah, that's a fair question. And first off, let me say that I don't feel that the sun controls it. In the real world we all live in, the solar cycles do control the Earth's planet, the Earth's climate. Temperatures are not rising. We have not had a hot spell all over the world, but there are certain parts of Europe and certain parts of the United States that have. And, yeah, this happens. This isn't the first time it's happened. It won't be the last time it's happened. These are local events that are limited by time. They last for a period of time, and then it goes away. And the next thing you know, you have a very, very cold winter, which also is not part of climate change. It's just that the polar vortex happened to move south a ways, and things got a lot colder than we expected them to. Climate change is something that is controlled over the long haul by the sun, as the charged particles from the sun fill up our radiation fields around the Earth, the magnetic field, and this prevents cosmic rays from coming through. And when cosmic rays can't come through, you have less cloud formation and things warm up. When the sun quiets down and the Van Allen belts, the magnetic field of the sun bleeds off the charged particles, mm-hmm. then more mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. the cosmic rays can get through. These are known absolutely to cause 30% of our overall cloud formation, and there is a larger cloud formation, and because of that, more of the sun is reflected off, and it gets cooler. And basically, that's what controls global climate.
Wow.
Carbon dioxide's got absolutely nothing to do with it.
What has nothing to do with it?
Carbon dioxide.
Okay. So you are in accord with his view in the Chicken Little agenda. Still, there is talk about records being set throughout the United States and in parts of Europe.
Yeah, this happens. There are records. And by the way, this is Robert you're speaking with.
It is. I did not know.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I heard the Chicken Little agenda mentioned, too. So, Robert, don't be bashful about pitching your book.
But I am delighted, John, to be talking with you, and I thank you for calling. But, yeah, this is, you've been speaking with me all along.
I did not know, Robert.
All right.
Robert, cool. Thank you. I did not know. Anyway, it's been great talking to you, and I wish you the best in this contest.
Oh,
thank you. By the way, so that everybody knows, you are the past president of the Horror Society. You are a professor emeritus who spent part of your career teaching the writing of science fiction. You are one of the experts in the field.
Well, thank you very much. I should make you my spokesman.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. By the way.
Yeah, John has – I got to know John from his book, his theories. What's the best title for your series? You can summarize it. I think there's 9 books in the series now.
There's one I wrote before, which is up to 6 books. I haven't continued it since then. It's the Inspector of the Cross series.
Yeah, the Inspector of the Cross series. That's how I got to know John. It's just one hell of a hard science fiction series blended with space opera. It's just I wrote him and told him how much I liked it and humbly asked him if he'd be willing to look at one of my things, and he did, and we developed a friendship, and we've been friends ever since.
Yes,
cool.
We have. It's a very profitable friendship, both personally and creatively. I've enjoyed it a great deal. By the way, I'm glad that I didn't ask you the one writer question I personally hate most to be asked.
What's that?
Can you guess what that is?
What?
Which book of yours do you like the most? Which is your favorite child?
Yeah, what's your favorite kid?
The one I haven't written yet.
There you go.
Yeah, the problem is, if somebody asks you that and you say that, they can't go out and purchase it.
Well, great.
Anyway,
thanks for calling in, John. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. Nice talking with you.
My pleasure. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, John.
All right. Now, Robert, he gave you a good segue to mention the name of your nonfiction book again. What is that?
That is The Chicken Little Agenda, Debunking Experts' Lies. When I came back from the South Pole, I moved into a small town in eastern Washington. I had an office on Main Street, and every week, a couple times a week, one of the ranchers would come by the office and toss a newspaper on my desk and say, "What the hell is this?" And he'd be pointing out a story that he objected to. You know what? Usually he was right. And I got to thinking about it and started writing a local column in the local newspaper, simply explaining some of the things that were going on or why so-and-so didn't get it right, and here's the way it really is. Well, the column got picked up and was syndicated all over the Northwest, and the Chicken Little Agenda, Debunking Experts' Lies, is a collection of those columns tied together with a common theme.
Oh, cool. And, you know, when I read things like your art stuff or whatever, I'm reminded of like the Tom Cruise movie Oblivion, where because somebody was a great fighter, they started making copies of that person. And I see all kinds of possibilities for where these stories could go. But John triggered a question in my mind. Now, this one's deep, Robert. You might have to think about the answer to this a little bit. But Max and Emacs, 9 lives each or 9 lives between them?
I love it. Well, I think that Max has used up a couple of his, and I know that Emacs has used 3 or 4 of his because he keeps getting himself into tangles. It's pretty tough when you walk through a portal into the vacuum of space.
Yeah. I hate it when that happens. All right. So, Beam, we've got another caller.
We do. So we're going to go to the lines here. And hello, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Am I the caller?
That's you. Colorado?
Yes. Okay. This is Ellen calling from the Denver area, and I have met Robert at several local science fiction conventions, and which has been rather fun. I've noticed that he prides himself on being a hard science fiction writer, so he's very picky about his facts and science and technology that he bases his stories. So, Robert, kind of where do you get your ideas from? Can you give some examples of some of the technology of today that you've, like cutting edge technology that you've grabbed onto and then projected out, and you've actually mentioned in your books the scientists or the actual research that took place way back in 2023?
Well, for example, recently, within the last several months, the cosmic microwave background cold spot was in the news, and the news in this case is in quotes because it's astrophysical type stuff. And a scientist, a female astrophysicist whose name escapes me at the moment, had come up with an explanation that explained all of the observable facts. And an explanation in this field are equations. And basically, the bottom line is that this cold spot is being described as two parallel universes contacting each other. And this is happening through entangled pairs, where one half of the entangled pair is in that universe and the other half of the entangled pair is in our universe. Now, that's as state-of-the-art as you can get.
Yeah.
That kind of befuddles my mind. And I guess that's where you're going with connecting your two theories.
That's correct.
If I'm not an astrophysicist, that's almost like fantasy to me, but you're actually basing it on real science.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm basing it on real science, but most of the scientists involved would probably say it's fantasy.
All science is fantasy at one point.
Oh, yeah.
What about some of your other stories? Is it like they're faster than light travel, something having to do with warp bubbles?
Yeah, there's a guy named Sonny White. I'm damned if I can remember his first real name. Everybody calls him Sonny. He's a PhD researcher. Used to work for NASA, and he got some cool ideas and opened up his own lab. Several months ago, he actually created in his lab the first micro warp bubble. This is the kind of bubble that the Star Trek Enterprise went through when it's doing its warp 5 or warp 7 or whatever the heck. Now,
would this be Harold Sonny White?
Yes, Harold Sonny White. Correct, Harold White. Well, it was in the IEPetus Federation. I have a young PhD working in the bowels of the Starchild Institute with some Casimir field plates, and he gets some results that are just astonishing, and he can't believe it. He runs his experiment again, gets the same results, and then, as any good young researcher will do, he goes to his boss and says, take a look at this. And what that turns into is the first faster-than-light drive that takes place about the middle of the book. And what he did 3 years before Sonny White did it was what Sonny White did in his lab.
Didn't you mention Sonny White in the story?
I didn't mention him by name because I didn't know him by name at that point.
Okay.
But what I did was mention a NASA scientist.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
it's
fun to take cutting state-of-the-art research and do something with it that is spectacular within the framework of a story. I love to do that.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoy your books, and I'm looking forward to reading the one about the Dyson sphere.
Yeah. Which
right.
still sounds
yeah,
to me like
another,
a round vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, that's a state-of-the-art book, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in, Ellen.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. All right.
Bye.
All right. Roll it, Beam.
Time to do a commercial.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay Sosus arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? In Operation Whiteout, Mac McDowell's Tuthis tangles with Argentine subs in the South Atlantic, then confronts a Chi-Com sub off Thurston Island. Escorting a Taiwanese sub, Tuthis is attacked by a Chinese Han-class sub and a North Korean AIP sub. Will Mac complete his mission, or will he meet his watery grave on the Pacific's abyssal plain? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Williscroft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
All right. Talk about a segue. Let's talk about the Mac McDowell mission.
Yeah, and what's next on that series, too?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what's next. Back in 1980, give or take, one of our obsolete Vela satellites, that's a polar orbit satellite, detected what many observers thought might be a nuclear explosion in the waters south of South Africa. Extensive investigation and my own research shows that it was almost certainly a joint operation between Israel and South Africa before apartheid came apart, and that they did indeed explode a nuclear device. Well, the next Mac McDowell mission is called Operation Vela Redux, and it takes place 10 years later. The crew, Mac, who is now the skipper of the Tuthis, and the crew are tasked with going into the water south of South Africa, which is now no longer an apartheid nation, to prevent, intercept, do what they have to do to stop the development of a suitcase size nuclear device.
Wow. That sounds like a book we might want to put on Vela.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. So what's the status of that? Is you started writing that one as well, or are you just in the outlining, thinking about it stage?
Yeah, I'm in the outline stage, in the early outline stage. I will get serious about the outline after the third Art Chronicle is completed.
Okay. And that one's the one called
With
RAND.
With any luck, I can have it written before the end of the year.
Oh, that'll be cool. All right, so that'll be book five in the Mac McDowell Mission series. But everybody, get out there and get those first four books, and especially Operation Ivy Bill, the one that kicks off the whole series, the one that's one of our best sellers right now. So we've got another commercial for a project that Robert G. Willis Croft was involved with. This one, he's not the direct author, but a contributor.
Submariner. 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Willis Croft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
Definitely a fun book. So what's the story behind this book, Robert?
I was the division officer, the sonar division officer on the USS von Steuben, the SSBN 632 Blue Crew, back in the early 70s. And we got a new sonar tech named Petty Officer Second Class Jerry Pate. He's a big guy. He was 6'2", way too big to be on a submarine, but he was the best sonar tech I ever had. And years later, I'm in Denver, in Centennial, and I'm getting occasional emails from my old shipmate, Jerry Pate, with stories about his interesting career, initially on diesel subs and then on nuclear subs. As I read these stories, I'm thinking, you know, this guy is an absolutely natural storyteller, kind of guy who's in a bar with a beer and you got 10 people sitting around just enthralled by the stories he's telling, and he can just continue until you tell him to stop. So I wrote him an email and I said, Jerry, you got a book here. And he came back with, you're kidding me, except he didn't say kidding.
Yeah.
And I said, no, you got a book. Send me all your stories. I'll edit them. I'll retain your voice. We'll get them organized. We'll get some pictures to go with it. And then I got a publisher that I think would like to publish it. And that was you.
Yeah.
And he sent me the stuff, and I put it together. And not only was it a book, it was a 100,000-word book. And it's
60 chapters. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
And what's cool is Jerry's having fun with it.
He's having so much fun with it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Jerry's listening tonight. He told me he'd be listening if he had nothing better to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And the real cool thing that came out of this is I'm on his email list now, so I get the stories. This is the stories
he's still telling.
He's still telling stories. So who knows? There could be a second book at some point. But, that's pretty cool. It's good that you helped him get all that put together, and you guys really accomplished something great there. 60 chapters, and that's just all kinds of fun. So that's Submariner.
It's really an awesome book. You know?
It really is, yeah. And we're proud to have it. We're proud to have both of you on our member team. So, Robert, we're just running out of time here. We got to wrap this thing up here. It's been great having you on. We had a whole bunch of questions to ask. We never even really got to them. So that's a good interview when you don't get to ask all the stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's because, you know, in the world I come from, the way a person is described is, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with bullshit.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's Robert G. Willis-Croft, people. You heard it yourself. He's a master of science fiction. He's a master of Cold War thriller adventures. He's got some nonfiction. He's got some children's. He's got just a whole lot of cool stuff out there, and Fresh Ink Group is proud to be his publisher. So Robert G. Willis-Croft, get out there and check out his books. We want to thank our callers who called in tonight and those who participated on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it this week. And we want to alert people next week. Make sure you get back here because we have a longtime friend, Joy York. Author Joy York is going to be our guest. We've known Joy for many, many, many years and have never interviewed her before. So we're real excited about that. And then who we got after that?
I'm thinking I may have interviewed her at the old place, or at least when I was the backup to Marlena. When she was interviewing, she may have done the interview, but I remember being in the – I'm almost sure of that, but I'm thinking I did before. But after that, we've got Kim Bacellia. Don't know anything about her, but we're all going to find out together. And then after that
– after that, we've got NBC newscaster David Carroll. We've already published two books of his, Volunteer Bama Dog and Hello Chattanooga, the one about all those people who visited Chattanooga over the last 100-plus years. We're getting ready to put out a book called I Won't Be Your Escape Goat. And this one's fun, where he's collected examples where people have written things, created signs, put stuff on TV where they used the wrong words or misspelled or things like that. So I Won't Be Your Escape Goat is going to be the name of that. David Carroll will be our guest. And after that?
And after that, we have V.S. Kamanis. Again, don't know much about her, but we're gonna meet her together, and we're gonna the listening audience gets to learn about her as we do. So. And after that.
All right. And then Barney's the next one after Via?
Yep, Barney's the next
one. All right,
one.
That's Barney Smith then. Barney Smith has got his own comic publishing company, and he creates comics himself too. So we're going to learn about that. Looking forward to meeting Barney Smith. Thanks again to Robert G. Willis-Croft and our callers, and we'll see everybody next week.
See everybody next week.
All right, bye, Robert.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.